Hello and welcome to the latest podcast from the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, or SWP for short, here in Berlin. In this podcast, we discuss what's on the minds of policymakers, or at the very least, what should be on their minds. It's the 11th of March, 2021, and today we're turning our attention to the Netherlands, where voters go to the polls next week for the general election. And they're certainly spoilt for choice when it comes to where to put their cross on the ballot. No fewer than 37 parties are running for parliament, although only 15 or so are expected to get seats. As ever, a multi-party coalition is likely to be needed to form a government. And while ruling by broad consensus is customary in the Netherlands, Dutch politics is more fragmented and more confrontational than ever. So today we're asking what the implications of these domestic divisions and discord may have for European and foreign policy. And we're addressing how the role of the Netherlands is changing within the EU, particularly in relation to its neighbour, Germany, which also goes to the polls this year. I'm Esme Nicholson, and to answer these questions, I'm joined today by two experts in European politics. On the line from the Netherlands, we have Rem Korteweg, who is a senior fellow at Klingendael, the Netherlands Institute of International Relations. His work looks at Europe's strategic role in the world at the intersection of foreign policy, trade, and security issues. Rem, thank you for taking the time to speak to us today.
It's a great pleasure to be here, Esme.
And in Berlin, also down the line, for social distancing reasons, we have Nikolai von Ondarza, who heads up the EU Research Division here at SWP. Nikolai's work focuses on the governance of the European Union, coalition building in EU institutions, and post-Brexit relations. Nikolai, thank you for being here today.
Great to talk to you.
So before we ask how the Dutch elections might impact relations abroad, I think it would be useful to get a sense of the domestic situation. Rem, you're there on the ground. Could you briefly bring us up to speed on the Dutch political landscape? Essentially, who are the key players? What do they stand for? And what are the main issues of this election?
The current political landscape in the Netherlands is, of course, shaped by this element of political fragmentation, Esme, that you hinted on. We currently have 13 parties represented in parliament. If you look at the polls, we're probably going to see 15 parties. Now, if you look at who are the main players, VVD and Mark Rutte is on Olympian heights in the polls. Despite this political fragmentation taking place, he and his party will probably win as many seats as the number two and the number three put together. Now, who are the number two and the number three spots? Number two is probably going to be Geert Wilders, the Eurosceptic firebrand, and his PVV party. In third spot, there'll be a competition probably between the Christian Democrats currently in government with Mark Rutte, D66, Liberal Democrats also in coalition with Mark Rutte. Those, you could say, are the second tier in terms of the political players. And then you have a number of much smaller parties, which could play an important role to get to the magic number of 76, which you need to have as number of seats to form a coalition. But, you know, Mark Rutte could choose for a coalition, depending on the results, with two larger parties. What's clear, however, is that Mark Rutte has already ruled out making a coalition government with Geert Wilders. So Geert Wilders, once again, will probably be relegated to the opposition benches and possibly be the largest opposition party, which means that we will most likely see a continuation of a sort of a center-right government under Mark Rutte's stewardship, possibly even with the same or almost the same parties that are in the current government.
And Rem, what are the main issues of this election? Is the pandemic playing a big role?
Well, some Dutch journalists have described this as the most boring campaign in recent memory. Campaigning in times of corona is not easy. We don't have big election rallies. The campaign as such is quite subdued. It only takes place in the talk shows, on television, in social media debates. I mean, our institute also organized a Zoom election debate about foreign affairs. But it's not what you would expect in terms of the energy level under normal circumstances. And that has everything to do, of course, with the coronavirus and the pandemic. And it also means that that's the only topic that we're talking about. How do we get out of the lockdown? How quickly do we get out of the lockdown? Which sectors are going to benefit from emerging out of lockdown first? Who needs more government support? Do we get a vaccination passport or not? Is there room to change a prime minister in times of national crisis or not? It's all about Corona.
Well, we're here to discuss some of the other issues and not focus as much on the pandemic, if possible. So, Rem, thank you very much for that overview from within the country. Stepping outside it, I'd like to turn to you, Nicolai, and ask you about the Netherlands' role within the European Union. Power dynamics have changed as a result of Brexit. So how is the Netherlands adjusting and where does it fit in?
I think the role of the Netherlands has quite changed dramatically over the last 5 years. If you look at the effects of Brexit from a Dutch point of view, I think they lost an important ally within the EU and most importantly, a balancing factor between Germany and France. And a Dutch diplomat once told me about what she called the trauma of De Ville, when in 2011, Merkel and Sarkozy walked the beaches of De Ville and thought they can dictate Eurozone policies from there during the crisis. And she said the ambition of the Netherlands is to avoid being caught in a German-Franco compromise and then just being compelled to follow the lead of Berlin and Paris. And therefore, the Netherlands built many important coalitions. The frugal states, so together with Austria, Sweden and Denmark on the budgetary questions, but also what some call the new Hanseatic League, so mostly together with Ireland, the Baltic states and other Nordic countries to push for more competitiveness and the Dutch idea on how the Eurozone and economic policy in the EU should work forwards. And I think that worked quite well. We saw in the big budget negotiations last year, even after Merkel and Macron made their big compromise over the recovery fund, who were the countries who needed to be convinced? It were the Visegrad countries on the rule of law questions, but then the frugals where Mark Rutte was in the center of negotiations on the balcony of the European Council when we saw all these images, who were was at the center. It was Merkel, it was Macron and Mark Rutte. And I think that really elevated the importance of the role of the Netherlands in EU negotiations.
Well, I mean, Mark Rutte can certainly be a divisive figure within the European Union. Rem, if I could turn to you, actually, and talk about Euroscepticism and Dutch politics isn't entirely free from it. To what extent does an anti-EU or anti-bailout discourse at home impact on relations in Brussels these days?
I think it's one of the prisms through which the Netherlands is regularly viewed. It's sometimes a lazy prism. Why? Because anti-EU and anti-bailout aren't necessarily the same thing. And this is what Mark Rutte would tell you. He would say to this question, well, hang on, we're tough on terms of conditions for bailouts, but that's precisely because we want the EU to be strong. We don't want these handouts to be given to countries that, in his view, aren't reforming. And so he would argue that it is because of this love for Europe that he is a tough negotiator on, for instance, the multi-annual financial framework or on the Next Generation EU fund. Now, of course, being a tough negotiator is something else than being completely isolated. And what we saw happen last year in the context of the negotiations about the Corona Recovery Fund and Next Generation EU was that the Netherlands was isolated. It was lambasted by Southern European leaders. It was even criticized by our favorite ally inside the EU, by the Germans. And that really set off some alarm bells, I would say, particularly in the Ministry of Finance, but also in Mark Rutte's office, that, well, you can go too far in terms of banging the drum on conditionality, in terms of showing solidarity towards, in this case, Southern European countries that are hit hard by the first wave of the Corona crisis.
Maybe I can bring Nicolai in there about the point made about Dutch-German relations. Nicolai.
I think it's interesting because precisely that movement also makes the Netherlands into a difficult partner for Germany. If you look at economic policy in particular, the two countries are quite close from the economic philosophy. I guess the German finance ministry and the Dutch finance ministry often have a very similar outlook on where the Eurozone should develop. But most often in recent times, when Germany wanted to embark on a compromise with France and other Eurozone countries, the Netherlands no longer wanted to come along. And this often meant, if you look at, for instance, voting data in the EU, the partner that Germany votes most often against is actually the Netherlands. And it's in areas of budgetary questions on the single market. And so when looking at this, I think there's a distinct balance where Germany sometimes wants the Hague to play a blocking partner to show France how difficult it is to achieve a compromise. But once that compromise is taken between Berlin and Paris, it's now become more difficult to bring the Netherlands along.
I think that's an absolutely fascinating piece of evidence you've put on the table, Nikolai, because speaking from the vantage point in The Hague, there is a sentiment that, particularly on economic financial issues, there is almost no light between the German position and the Dutch position. And you're absolutely right that sometimes the Dutch are used to play the tough guy, the bad cop in the negotiations in a European context, because then Germany can go alongside and play the good cop and then forge a compromise between, say, a northern perspective then advocated by the Netherlands and a southern perspective sometimes advocated by France. And that helps move Europe forward, I would argue. But it does require very intense and close coordination between the Netherlands and Germany to continue. And what you saw happen last year in the context of the ministers of finance discussions regarding the use of the ESM or the development of the Corona Recovery Fund, that coordination didn't really seem to be there. And so I think from a Dutch point of view, there is always this element of concern that, yes, we think Germany thinks like us, but is that actually the case?
Nikolai.
And it also means that the Netherlands kind of plays the role of a bad guy. I mean, before Brexit, especially in budget negotiations, this partner for Germany was the United Kingdom, who was often very willing to put in a veto and say, okay, we're not going along with this. And now with the UK out of the picture, the question was, I think for many people, who would now be that bad guy? Would it be the Germans themselves? Or, and I think it turns out now to be more the case, it's the Netherlands with some smaller partners. And that's a more comfortable position for Germany because it doesn't have to play the extreme veto card. But it means balancing the relations between The Hague and Berlin are more important and need to be touched more carefully, because otherwise the Netherlands really slides into that role of the UK of being outside and isolated on some questions where it might not want to be isolated.
And you put the issue on the table, but I completely agree that this is problematic for the Dutch, because it might work once by positioning yourself as the bad cop. But when you need to get things done in a European context, when the Dutch really have a national interest they want other countries to join, then if you have this image of being the bad cop, it's difficult to get reciprocity. And so it requires huge finessing, I would say. And so I absolutely agree with this necessity of closer Berlin-The Hague coordination in this context.
Returning now to the Dutch election campaign, I'd like to ask you both what the different parties' positions are on foreign policy and on security issues. And let's boil it down to the positions of the main parties, if we can. Rem, perhaps you could start by giving us a rundown of the parties' different positions on Europe.
Right. So what we see on Europe, and it's perhaps even most interesting to look at the different positions inside the current government, they're quite far apart. So our discussion just now on bailout or on showing financial solidarity towards the rest of the EU, D66 is actually advocating new European taxes. They really want to strengthen the European Union. They're advocating a right of initiative for the European Parliament. It's very convinced pro-European. And then you have the Christian Democrats and Mark Rutte's VVD that say, well, if anything, we need to stop the EU from moving in this trajectory towards a transfer union. If anything, we need to underline that the Next Generation EU Corona Recovery Fund is a one-off, that it doesn't create a precedent. And they're already also with an eye to potential coalition governments emerging from this election, you see that the EU and Europe and the degree of giving new competences to the EU really is a bone of contention.
Moving on from Europe, Nicolai, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Dutch transatlantic relations, especially in terms of security policy. Has there been a shift in the party's positions since Joe Biden's inauguration?
I think from viewed from the outside, the Netherlands has always been anchored in the transatlantic alliance, a big supporter of NATO within the European context, one of the countries who looked more towards the United States than having a big focus on what we now call European strategic autonomy. But I think in recent years, the Netherlands has also become a little bit more skeptic towards the US in effect of Trump. And we haven't seen the same rapprochement with the Biden administration that we've seen in other European countries. As far as I'm aware, there hasn't been a direct phone contact between Rutte and President Biden. So the smaller European countries haven't been gathered with attention. And I think between looking from the outside, between the Dutch parties, there's now emerging a more sort of focus of distancing itself from the Americans in international affairs.
Rem, what's your view on this?
We're definitely seeing a shift away from a focus or the transatlantic reflex that's traditionally associated with Dutch foreign policy towards a more European approach. We see this very clearly in the election programs of the main political parties. Actually, it's only Mark Rutte's VVD that's now still presenting itself as a fully convinced transatlantic party. Traditional transatlantic parties like the Christian Democrats hardly talk about the United States, actually say that the Netherlands should invest in developing a European Security Council that brings in the Brits post-Brexit to talk about European security affairs. They talk about the necessity to really invest in European military cooperation. You have parties like the Green Left that say, well, we need to invest in European autonomy on a military front, regardless of who is in the White House, whether it's Biden or Trump or whoever comes next. And so across the board, except for the VVD, you could make the argument there is this turn towards Europe. And it's not just in military affairs. I think what you're seeing in terms of European industrial policy, in terms of moving towards European strategic autonomy in the economic realm, there is really a French wind blowing through Dutch politics, very much in favor of strengthening Europe's role in protecting the internal market. Even the VVD, tradition pro-trade, pro-liberal policies, is now advocating investment screening, is saying that we should perhaps take national stakes in strategic sectors. And so there is really a sea change of a move towards Europe in the Dutch foreign policy.
Nicolai, is this how you see it?
Yeah, I want to add from a German angle, the one area where I saw 100% overlap in terms of voting between the Netherlands and Germany was on trade, where both countries used to be very much in favor of liberalization, in favor of large-scale trade agreement with other economic blocs in the world. But now this sort of French idea of autonomy in terms of producing medical equipment, in terms of producing vaccines, this in terms of a European industrial strategy, that is happening in Germany as well. And I think here's maybe the biggest overlap still of German and Dutch economic policy.
And finally, let's not forget China. Where do the parties stand on Europe's relations with Beijing? Rem?
The China issue, or the question of how to deal with China, has really made a remarkable rise over the past couple of years in Dutch politics. And actually, since the Dutch government produced a China strategy or a China note about a year and a half ago, we've really seen growing awareness or conscious building around the question of how to deal with China. What you can tell by an analysis of the election programs is that almost every party takes a stand on China, but it's not hugely different. So all parties are actually very critical of the role that China is playing geopolitically in terms of the great power struggle that's emerging between the United States and China. Parties point to the necessity to push back against increasing Chinese influence in the European internal market. There are concerns in terms of the defense front about what's happening in the South China Sea. So there is a politicization of China taking place, and it's generally negative. There are also parties that are pointing to human rights violations towards the plight of the Uyghurs, and that requires a different stance. there are only one or two parties, and the VVD is among them, together with, I think, D66, that say, well, but hang on, China is also an economic opportunity. So one of the risks I think we have in terms of the development of our Dutch-China policy is that the pendulum seems to be swinging firmly towards the let's view China as a competitor and as a rival, rather than also taking into consideration this notion that China also offers economic opportunities. And so a new coalition government will have to strike a balance on this issue.
Nikolai, are there similarities here with how the German parties ahead of the Bundestag elections in September also view China?
I think it's interesting is that Germany and the Netherlands have maybe a very similar starting point on that. Both have very tight economic relations with China. For Germany, China has now for a long time been the main trading partner. Interestingly, the Netherlands is, if you combine exports and imports, number two for Germany. But both, at least on a declaratorial level, put human rights and the close relations to the United States at the forefront. But if you compare the two, at least from the outside, you see a much stricter movement in the Netherlands towards a confrontive stance on China, where in Germany it's still much more contested and still unsure where the main parties are positioning themselves ahead of the elections. And so here I see, even though Germany is a bigger partner and would maybe because it would be expected to lead in Europe on China policy, a much bigger hesitancy to take this confrontative stance, and also a bigger hesitancy to follow the lead of the new US administration and confront China in geopolitics.
Well, we're almost out of time, but before we go, I'd like to ask the inevitable question about predictions. Where are you placing your bets for this election, and how might that result impact the Netherlands' role in Europe and further afield? Nikolai, perhaps you could start.
My expectation is still that we will have a longer time of government formation. We will see at the end of this year who takes longer to get a government, Germany or the Netherlands, with their fragmented political party system. But unlike Germany, I think the bet is also quite clear that Rutte will be again the next prime minister, whereas we will get a new chancellor and most likely a new coalition in government. So at the top, there won't be much change from a German point of view. The interesting question is more, will there be changes below the surface in the makeup of the coalition? And will that then impact Dutch European policies, as we've discussed earlier, with a bit more willingness to go along with Franco-German compromises, or with a sort of putting the Dutch in that position of trying to play more the role of a veto player that tries to be a break whenever Berlin and Paris come too close to each other?
And Rem, how many days or months do you think it'll take for a new government to form?
Well, let me take a different view from Nikolai. Yes, Mark Rutte is going to be the next prime minister. I'm happy to go along with that. But there are also signs that given that the country is currently in crisis and wants to exit the pandemic as quickly as possible, and given that things haven't been going so smoothly, maybe there is enough pressure to move towards a quicker formation process where we don't have a coalition agreement that is, you know, 80 pages long, that is more on headlines, in order to get up and running again.
Nikolai.
To end with a point on what Germany should take out of that, I think there's also the question for the next German government, how it wants to deal with the Netherlands. In the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years, the Netherlands have been an afterthought. So looking first at Paris, trying to get an agreement between Berlin and Paris there, and only then trying to get the Dutch on board. And I think one question will be on how to maybe broaden its engagement, trying to bring countries like the Netherlands earlier on board and try to build bigger compromises and not just looking at the Berlin-Paris axis for the EU27.
Well, that's all for this week from the SWP podcast. I'd like to thank our guests, Rem Korteweg and Nikolai von Ondarza. You can find links to their latest publications on the SWP and Klingendael websites, where you'll also find information about other publications and events. And if you like what you hear, you can subscribe to this podcast on SoundCloud and Spotify. So until next time, it's goodbye from me, Esme Nicholson. Thank you for listening. Thank you.